Hey, so I was thinking this afternoon, wondering to myself, what am I going to talk about tonight? And I had a few ideas go through my mind. And one was to talk, because I'm supposed to be talking about emotional health and how to develop positive emotions. So one idea was to talk about friendliness, having an emotion or an attitude of friendliness. And that made me think that according to traditional Buddhist scriptures, friendliness is not classed as an emotion. In fact, you never hear it spoken of. You know, you hear the word friends, okay, but you never hear friendliness and being a friendly person, at least I haven't. And it made me recall that I had the privilege of being at some of the Mind and Life conferences where His Holiness the Dalai Lama and some of the Tibetan scholars met with some Western scientists. And one of the conferences was about destructive emotions. And the scientists came with their list of destructive emotions and their list of positive emotions. And they didn't always match what the Buddhists had. And I remember one afternoon, one of the Buddhist presenters going through the Buddhist lists of, you know, what are positive mental factors and what are negative ones. And what they forgot, and the scientists were scratching their heads saying, huh? Because some of the things that the Buddhists listed as being positive or potentially positive, the scientists couldn't see as positive, and they wondered about that. So a few things came out of it. First of all, was that the Buddhists had forgotten to tell the scientists that the Buddhist list, the whole Buddhist psychology, was formulated in terms of what mental factors, what attitudes and emotions are conducive for attaining liberation, and which ones take you further away from liberation. Okay? So the scientist list of positive and negative emotions wasn't formulated on that premise. Okay. So also, because of that difference in premise, that the Buddhists were aiming towards liberation, how they defined positive was emotions and attitudes that got you closer to liberation. They weren't necessarily emotions and attitudes that made you instantaneously happy. Whereas from the Western scientific perspective, it was a positive emotion if it made you feel good, and it was a negative emotion if it made you feel bad. From a Buddhist perspective, that is not very good criteria for evaluating what emotions are useful in our life and which aren't. Okay. For example, okay, when we are very attached to something, yeah, and you know, you meet somebody that you think is like absolutely fantastic. You know, like when you first fall in love and it's like, wow. You know, in the West, we would call that emotion a positive one. From a Buddhist perspective, that kind of emotion takes you way, way, way away from liberation because it gets you completely sunk into my happiness and my pleasure and how I can be happy right now. And it gets you sunk into this very self-centered mental state. So that kind of feeling is considered a negative emotion from a Buddhist perspective. Okay. On the other hand, from a Buddhist perspective, from a Western perspective, when you are expecting a lot of happiness and then you're kind of disappointed by it, you know, or disillusioned. It's like, gee, I do all these things to be happy and I, you know, happiness eludes me. From a Western perspective, that's a negative emotion. From a Buddhist perspective, that kind of emotion will lead you closer to liberation because it will lead us, instead of just focusing on how can I get everything arranged in my life so that I'm happy, it'll help us to see that it's impossible to get all the ducks in a row so that we're perpetually happy in a world that's constantly changing. And so therefore, it's much better to aim for liberation and to aim to free our mind from all sorts of attachments and aversions to external objects and people. So that kind of disillusionment from a Buddhist perspective is a positive emotion, even though you may not feel instantaneously good from it. Okay? So this is just something that I found a little bit interesting that I thought I'd introduce, you know. And so when the scientists were going through their list of emotions, friendliness was listed as an emotion. And it's interesting because I had never thought of friendliness as an emotion. I always think of it as more of a behavior. Okay? But then that also brought up the topic of what is considered an emotion in science and in Buddhism. And they're quite different because one of the scientists told me anyway, and I'm aware that, you know, scientists have all, not everybody agrees on things, but he told me is that there's three components to an emotion. One was the feeling that you had. One was the different physical functions going on in your body, your heart rate, your galvanic skin response, your level of serotonin, and what your synapses were doing and all of that, but that was part of emotion. And behavior was, so he said that there were three components to an emotion, you know, those three. Where if from a Buddhist perspective, we only look at the mental part. Yeah? From our perspective, you know, what's going on in your body is a physical reaction. That's not an emotion, because an emotion is based on experience. And that physical reaction is just what, you know, the chemicals and, you know, electrical circuits in your body are doing. And similarly, we don't count behavior as part of an emotion because, from a Buddhist perspective, two people could do the same behavior, but out of two different kinds of motivations with two different kinds of emotions behind them. Okay? For example, one person can act very passively and inside be incredibly angry. Another person can act passively and inside be very peaceful and open. Okay? So just, you know, this whole east meets west and how people frame things and put things together I found to be quite interesting. So anyway, they had considered friendliness as an emotion, whereas I thought of it more as a behavior. But in thinking about it, you know, to have a friendly behavior, okay, there has to be a certain kind of attitude in the mind, a certain kind of openness towards other people, and a certain kind of openness towards ourselves. And so in thinking about this, I was thinking that actually some of the very traditional Buddhist meditations that we do to develop love and compassion for all infinite sentient beings actually have worked in my own individual case to increase the attitude of being friendly towards other people. Okay? And so I thought maybe I would talk a little bit about some of those traditional meditations and then see how they could help open us up so that in our heart we're more receptive and open to other people, and then in our behavior we are more friendly. Okay? So that's what I thought I would focus on a little bit here. So, one of the first meditations that we encounter, you know, that help us open our hearts and minds towards others is a meditation on equanimity, where we try and free our mind from attachment to people that we think are wonderful, who we consider friends, aversion or hatred, hostility towards people that we consider threatening or who have harmed us, and apathy towards everybody else. Okay? Because if you look, you know, it's hard to be friendly to everybody when our mind is like an emotional yo-yo, going up and down between attachment and glee at seeing somebody, and aversion and kind of bleh at seeing somebody, and then just, oh, who cares? You know, apathy or indifference when seeing somebody. You know, how can we be friendly when our minds go up and down like that all the time? It's very difficult, okay? Because we can't really be open. So there's a very interesting meditation that we do, you know, regarding this, where we ask ourselves, you know, why am I so attached to somebody? And then why do I have so much hostility towards somebody else? And then the third person, why don't I care beans about this guy over here? And what we discover, if we had a little bit more time, I'd lead you through this meditation, but, you know, I won't do it this evening. I'll just dangle the carrot. But it's quite interesting when we begin to ask ourselves these questions, because what we come up with is, wow, I'm so attached to this person because they make me feel good. They, you know, agree with my ideas. They give me gifts. They support me when I'm down. They encourage me when I don't have confidence. We have a lot. They're interested in the same things I'm interested in. They have talents that I don't have, so I feel like I can rely on them, or I can trust them. You know, I can confide in them. So we have reasons like that for being attached to certain people. And then when it comes to other people, it's like they scare me, and I feel uncomfortable, and I don't feel safe, and they've harmed me, or they've harmed somebody else that I care about, or they criticize me behind my back, they, you know, scream at me to my face, they dent my car, whatever it is. Okay, so that's usually the reason why we have hostility. And then the third emotion, apathy, why do we have that? Well, they don't influence me one way or the other, so they're kind of, you know, like the pillar. I ignore them. They're almost not even a human being with feelings. So when we start to look at just how our own mind thinks, you know, does this ring a bell? Do any of you see these kinds of attitudes inside? When we look, you know, well, what do they all revolve around, these three attitudes of attachment and hostility and apathy? They all revolve around how somebody makes me feel. Or not necessarily how they make me feel, but how I choose to feel around them. Let's be honest about it. They don't really make us feel that way. We feel that way. We choose to feel that way around them. And we begin to see that we classify people as friends, enemies, and strangers based on the very profound criteria of how they treat me. I hope you realize that I'm being a little bit tongue-in-cheek here, okay? Because the profound criteria of how they treat me is according to the me that's the center of the universe. Right? Yeah? Because, you know, okay, if they treat my friend nice, that's a point in their favor. I can still get attached to them. But if they treat my enemy nice, I don't like them. So they still have that same quality of being nice and friendly. If they show that quality to me, they're a good person. If they show that quality to somebody else who I don't like, oh boy, I don't like them. It's the same quality, but just depending on who they show it to. Okay? Somebody is deceptive and conniving. If they show that quality to me, they're a horrible person. If they show that quality to somebody I don't like, go for it. Isn't it? Yeah? So, we think that we're perceiving people objectively, but we aren't. We're doing it totally through the filter of me. It's very, very subjective. And we're the ones who create our friends. We're the ones who create enemies. We're the ones who make somebody into a stranger. It's not like that they're that way objectively out there. It's totally based on our own minds and how we view them. It's a little bit shocking to realize this sometimes when we really contemplate this deeply. It's very surprising. It kind of shakes our world because all along we thought that we were just going around experiencing people, how they were objectively from their side, and then suddenly we realize, hey, no, they're not objectively like that from their side. It's me who's putting them in one category or another based on how they treat me. Okay? So when we begin to see how our mind is deceiving ourselves in doing that, then we begin to let go of those judgments and we stop putting people in those three boxes quite as much. And that opens the arena for us to look at them a little bit more openly. And what do we see when we look past how somebody affects me? That's the center of the universe. If we take ourselves out of the center of the universe, I mean, imagine that. What do we see when we look at others? We see people who are exactly like us, wanting to be happy and not wanting to be unhappy. Right? Yeah? When you look into the heart of the people that you're very close to, isn't it very obvious that they just want to be happy and they don't want to suffer? Yeah. You can tune into that with the people that you're close to, that you care about. Oh yeah, they're just like me, they want to be happy, they don't want to suffer. And then you enlarge it a little bit and you think about strangers. Oh, that person at the gas station. Actually, they're just like me, they want to be happy and they don't want to suffer. That person at the bank that I don't know, also, they just want to be happy. They don't want to be miserable. And then you start looking, when you're in a traffic jam, you look at everybody around you. Yeah. Madison doesn't have subways, do you? If you go to New York, you go on the subway and you look at everybody. Oh, they just want to be happy and not suffer, just like me. And so you begin to see that in terms of strangers. And then you expand it a little bit more and you look at the people that you don't like, the people who scare you, people who have harmed you. And when you look in their hearts, when you've taken away that projection of they're an awful, rotten person from their side, when you've taken that away and you just look into their hearts, what do you see? Is the same thing. Somebody is just trying to be happy and not be miserable. Don't you think so? Yeah? Now the trick is that all sounds very nice theoretically. Yeah. But when you start thinking about Osama bin Laden wanting to be happy and not suffer, you might have a little bit of a problem. And when you start thinking of George W. as wanting to be happy and not wanting to suffer, you might have more problems. But what we're getting at here is, to take down our prejudices and our biases and our opinions of other people and just see what that very basic, raw, common denominator in all of us is. And no matter who it is, no matter what socioeconomic group they're in, what, educational class they're in, whether they're young or they're old or they're gay or they're straight or they're male or they're female or they're Republicans or they're Democrats or they're animals or they're human beings or whatever it is, every living being that we look at has that same those same qualities of simply wanting to be happy and not suffer exactly like us. When we can tune into that and stop the biased, judgmental mind that looks at people superficially, then there's a very profound change and our heart really opens to others. Because, and this is an element that actually increases our friendliness, because when we look at other people, instead of feeling like, oh, there's somebody, I don't know them at all, we look at somebody and we say, oh, wow, I know them very well. They want to be happy and they don't want to be miserable, just like me. I know something very important about them. And I can resonate with that very important thing that I know about them. So even though you don't know them as a person and their, you know, this life's circumstances and their whole storyline, you know something very important about them that you can tune into and you can resonate with. Okay? When we can do that, we automatically become friendlier, don't we? Because we're not going to be so guarded, like, who is that guy, you know? Who's that guy? How are they going to affect me? And, you know, what do they think? And, you know, all that. Because we've just kind of dropped all that. Yeah. And all we see in front of us is a sentient being. Okay. So then it becomes much more, much easier just to be, to give people the benefit of the doubt and to be friendly and to say hi and to start up a conversation with them, because you know them already in a very profound way. You don't know all the details of their life. You can start learning about that. But, you know, there's a way inside of you where you don't feel alienated and turned off, but you really feel this resonance with everybody else. So this is a very good way to train our mind, and it has a very definite effect on our relationships with other people. Okay? Because a lot of people come to me and they say, I have a really big problem with being judgmental. Anybody here have that problem? Oh, I saw 4 or 5 hands go up. I'm so glad nobody else here has the problem that I have with, together with those other 4 or 5 people. Rest of you don't have problems being judgmental? Shall we try that again? Who has problems being judgmental? You don't? Your hand didn't go up? Okay. It's quite interesting to watch our mind, you know? As you just sit somewhere. I mean, even coming in here, yeah, walking into the room, we can start to look, and we look at everybody. Or even, you know, you're going from your car, walking on the street, you know, coming into here, and you see these people, and, oh, there are these young boys skateboarding. Oh, they're so reckless, they're going to run me down. These young people are just totally uncooperative. Ah, you know. Or then you see somebody who, you know, is kind of like about your age and, you know, oh boy, they're really good looking. I wonder how I can start a conversation with them. And then you see somebody who's very old and you go, oh, an old person. Boring. Yeah, I don't want to talk to them. I don't want to get involved with them. And then you see a little child and you go, oh, so cute. But I'm sure glad they belong to their parents because I can't stand when they cry. You know. And then, you know, as we watch, just, you know, we're just seeing people, you know, they're total strangers. And how our mind makes up commentary. You know, oh, this one's too fat. That one's too thin. This one walks funny. Yeah. That one looks like they're intelligent. This one looks like they're kind of like an artist. That one looks angry. This one, you know, looks, you know, however it is, you know. You know, gee, that one, their clothes don't match. Their shirt and their pants don't match. Didn't their mother teach them how to, you know, dress properly? Oh, this one over here has a broken sandal. What a slob. Yeah. But that one looks poor. Oh, I don't want to hang around near anybody who's poor. They might be a criminal. Yeah, lock up the poor people. You know, and we watch just what our minds start saying about other people. Oh, this one's from a different ethnic group than me. I better be careful. And this is all based on just external appearances. And yet just based on that, we think we know a whole lot about somebody. And we then, after that, we get into these three things of being attached and clinging to them. Okay, the ones who look interesting. Okay. We have aversion towards the one who our mind describes as scary. And we have apathy towards everybody else. And in any case, the end result of the whole thing is that we're better than all of them anyway. Okay? Because all of our judgments, you know, most of them are, you know, somehow critical, aren't they? Why do they part their hair like that? Why, they'd look so much better if they parted their hair the other way. Yeah. Oh, that one, their glasses. I wonder where they got those glass frames. Well, they look kind of okay, but oh, those other glass frames, I really don't like them. Yeah. And it's just this incredible amount of garbage we fill our mind with. You know, projecting it onto other people. And then we wonder why we feel alienated and why our heart is so closed. You know, it's easy. Look at what we let our mind think. Okay. Whereas if we really take some time to try and drop that other stuff and look into people's heart, what we find is that everybody's the same, just wanting to be happy and not wanting to suffer. Okay? Whether they agree with our ideas or don't, whether they like us or whether they don't like us, whether they help us or whether they hinder us, they all have that common quality. Okay? And when we see that, that gives us a way to be able to relate to them and to overcome a lot of our biases. I do a lot of prison work. I don't know a lot. I do some prison work. And the people that I meet teach me a lot. And one of the things that they have taught me is how to overcome a lot of these kind of judgments. Because I get letters from people. I have no idea most of the time how they even found my address. But I get letters from them. They're in prison. They want to learn about Buddhism. I've taken what's called the Bodhisattva vows. So under these vows, if somebody asks you for help, you give help. You know, that you don't have this option of, you know, do I feel like it or not? It's like, you know, you've already made that determination. Somebody asks for help. So, you know, to the best of your extent, you help. So here are these people who ask me for help, and I write to them, and I sometimes go meet them, or I teach in their Buddhist groups in prison or whatever. And a lot of them have committed the crimes that I am most terrified of. And it's very interesting becoming friends with somebody who has done the thing that you're most scared of. Okay? Because what they have taught me is that one action in a person's life does not define the value of their life. Okay? One action does not characterize their value and their worth as human beings. You know, they've taught me to really look beyond the superficial appearances of people and really look in their hearts, because the guys that I write to are really struggling, and most of them have, you know, well, the ones that I write to, of course, they have a lot of regret for what they've done, and they're trying to put their lives together. And in many circumstances, they are much more sincere in their spiritual path than people on the outside are, because they've had to spend some time really looking honestly at themselves, whereas those of us on the outside have much greater opportunity to distract ourselves and to rationalize things. So it's been a real gift to me that I've gotten to know them and to, you know, be able to look in their hearts and see, you know, here's somebody who's wanting to be happy and not wanting to suffer. And at the time they murdered somebody, or at the time they raped somebody, or whatever it was, that was actually the key thing in their mind, was they were trying to be happy and not suffer. They were totally confused, and they will admit it now, about the methods to be happy and to avoid suffering. But that's what they were trying to do in all of their confusion that prompted them to do that harmful act. And when I see that, and then I look inside myself and see how, yeah, you know, we're the same, just wanting to be happy and not wanting to suffer, then, you know, this distance fades away. And I've seen that I can't just sit up there and, you know, sit on my little throne of, you know, I'm a very virtuous person, these people are criminals, you know, because that's not at all the case. Because actually, we're very, very much the same inside. So it's been an extraordinary experience for me to learn to appreciate and to value and to be friendly and to actually enjoy the company of people who have done things that I find very frightening. But it's also good, you know, besides what I explained already, it's helped me see that if I can have some compassion for them, for what they've done, maybe I can also have some compassion for me, for my own mistakes. So it helps in a lot of different ways. But let me pull it back to this whole thing of being friendly and being open. Yeah? And so the more we can drop these discriminations, the more, you know, we can be open and receptive to other people. Okay, then there's another meditation that we do that increases our friendliness. And this one is called Considering the Kindness of Others. Okay? And it's done in a few different ways, okay? In one way, we start out and we start thinking of the kindness of our friends. And that's pretty easy to do. And normally when we think of the kindness of our friends, we get attached to those people, we cling on to them more. Here, when we're meditating and thinking about their kindness, we guard our mind from that kind of compassion, that kind of clinging. And instead, we just think of, you know, how our friends have been kind to us. And we generate in our own hearts a sense of appreciation so that we don't take them for granted. And I think that's very important. You know, often with friends, we begin to take them for granted, you know, especially when they're old friends. And we often take our family members for granted. Sometimes the people who have been the kindest to us, you know, our parents or brothers or sisters or a spouse or, you know, somebody like that that we're very close to, often we really take them for granted. And don't treat them very well. And I think that's because we've forgotten how to see their kindness. We expect them to be kind, and often we begin to demand that they be kind. Okay? Like when you put it this way, who do you get angriest at? The people you care about or strangers? Family members or strangers? Who do you get angry at? Hello? Family. Yeah? Most people get much more ticked off at family members. Okay? When you look back at how you've treated people, the awfulest things that you've done to people, have they been to people that you love or people that are strangers? people that you love, isn't it? We would never treat strangers the way we treat the people we love. Okay? And this is because we take those people for granted. You know? And we feel that there's so much a part of us that we can demand that they meet our every need, or we can demand that they be everything that we want them to be. Okay? And we can become very demanding and pick at their faults up, down, and across, can't we? You know? Especially after you've been married for a while. You know, pick at somebody's faults. Parents, we can see our parents' faults very well, can't we? Can see our kids' faults very well. You know, all these people have so many faults. It's good that they're around somebody like me who has fewer faults. Right? Yeah? Okay, so our big fault of picking faults we don't even notice is a fault, do we? So when we do this meditation and start to think of the kindness of family members and the kindness of close friends, we do it with the view to really appreciate these people and not take them for granted. And so to remind ourselves of the kindness that they've shown to us, instead of making a list of all the times when they've disappointed us. Now, to go back and really think of the kindness that they've shown. And just even simple things, you know, they clean the bathroom. Actually, I think that's a really big kindness, don't you? Yeah? Okay. Or they took out the trash. Or they drove me somewhere. Or they took care of me when I was sick. Okay. And just think of, you know, just small, everyday things that the people that you're close to do for you. And if you make it a habit to do that, then whenever you see these people, you see them in beauty, you see them in kindness. And your relationships improve a lot with them. You know? And this demanding, you know, mind really fades away because we feel very happy and appreciative for who they are. And then we extend that, you know, from seeing the kindness, we extend that from friends and families to acquaintances and teachers, people, colleagues, people at work, okay? And often we've never really put forth the energy to think of these people as kind. But if you think, for example, that your boss is kind in giving you a job and giving you a salary, okay, it may not be as much as you want. You would appreciate five times as much. But, you know, they are kind in giving us the money, yeah. They're kind in giving us opportunities. Our colleagues at work are kind because we depend on them to get whatever job done that we're working on, yeah. If you're in school, your professors, you know, your advisors, the librarian who helps you find a book, yeah, the people at the computer service center, they're all kind. The people in the, you know, in the grocery store that you chat with are kind, your neighbors are kind, you know. As you begin to see, just, you know, in your immediate surroundings, you know, how kind are the acquaintances that you know and how they help you in many, many ways. And again, when you train your mind to see that way, your heart opens and it becomes much easier to be friendly to those people. So then you walk into work and you smile because you realize you're with a group of people that you depend on and who have helped you and who have been kind to you. Yeah. Instead of walking into work like, oh God, you know, why haven't you finished that project yet? Come on! You know, you can walk in and actually be courteous and smile at people. Completely transforms the way, you know, your work relationships are. And when you start to spread that awareness of kindness further, then you begin to see even the kindness of strangers. And so like all those construction workers, I hear that there's two seasons in Madison. There's summer and, no, there's winter and construction. Somebody told me that. So, so when you're driving past all the guys who are working on the roads, instead of getting angry like, ah, why do they have this lane blocked off right now when I'm in a hurry? They should do this work at 3 o'clock in the morning, when it won't disturb me, you know, instead of having thoughts like that, to drive past the road workers and say, thank you so much, because without you doing this work, which is really hard, I wouldn't have a road to drive on to get where I'm going. Yeah. And when you look at the truck drivers around you, you know, instead of thinking, oh, these truckers, they're just hogging the lanes, you know, these people are transporting the goods that we go to the store and buy. If they didn't do their work, we wouldn't have what we use. Mm-hmm. And so when we begin to look at how interdependent we are in society and how everything we have, everything we know, everything we do depends so much on other living beings, then we begin to see all their efforts as acts of kindness. You know, whether they've had the intention to help us specifically or not, that's not the criteria for somebody being kind. The fact that they've done something that has a positive effect on us, that's the criteria for seeing them as kind. And so that in that way, strangers can be tremendously kind. Like, you know, I don't know about you, but I don't know the people who put, the electricians who put these lights in here. Okay, anybody know who put the lights in here? Yeah, do we know who to go and to say thank you so much? I have no idea. However, I'm very glad these people did this work. I'm benefiting very directly from it, because if they didn't do their job, we'd all be sitting here in total darkness. And so weren't they kind to come and build this building and put in lights? Okay? So again, when we train our mind to look in this way, you know, we can see how interrelated we are with so many other people, and a sense of appreciation comes for them. Okay? That helps us to be much more friendly to strangers. Because the person that you smile at as you're walking down the street might just be the electrician. You don't know. Okay? And then we branch out further from there, and we think about the people who have harmed us, or the people whom we consider threatening and dangerous. And we might say, wait a minute, you know, seeing that person as kind, that's going too far. But step back for a minute and think about it this way, okay? If you recall a situation in your life where you had a really hard time, okay, and you went through a lot of suffering, did you come out of that situation stronger in some way or another? Did you learn something valuable from that experience? Yeah. Did you maybe learn a little bit more compassion for others, having gone through some difficulties yourself? Or did you find that you were better able to deal with difficulties now than you were before because of having had that experience? Okay. Often when we look back on difficulties we've had in the past, we see that we've grown in ways from them that we never could have grown otherwise. And in that way, we can look at the people involved in them and say that they were kind in the sense of providing us with that opportunity to grow. Okay? It's an interesting way to look at it. Okay, it's not masochistic to say thank you for harming me. But it's a way of transforming our minds so that we let go of our feelings of poor me, we let go of our feelings of resentment, and we realize how much we have benefited even from difficulties. Okay, so again, if we can learn to see even people who have harmed us as kind and providing an opportunity for us to grow, then again, our mind opens. We can become more friendly to them. We feel better about them. Okay. So one, you know, some of the benefits of consciously developing a feeling of friendliness is that we feel a lot better inside of ourselves, don't we? Yeah. When we have a friendly, open attitude, our own mind is more peaceful and content. And then, of course, the other people we relate to, you know, receive the benefit of our friendliness. And our relationships are much stronger and much better. Okay? Now, as a little addendum to this, being friendly, yeah, doesn't mean that you have to do everything the other person likes. Okay? And being friendly doesn't mean that you have to, you know, hang out and talk with people endlessly. And it doesn't mean that you have to be, you know, Miss Cheerful Extrovert. Yeah? Friendliness, you know, remember I was saying in Buddhism, it's the feeling inside, it's not always the behavior. So I think the internal feeling of friendliness can manifest in different kinds of behavior depending on the situation and depending on the individual. Okay? So don't think that being friendly means that you have to be, you know, the most popular person around town. Okay? It doesn't mean that. Yeah. It just means that there's a certain openness and receptivity in you. And then whoever you encounter, whoever you relate through that feeling of friendliness. And relationships develop as they are. And like I said, it doesn't mean you have to talk for hours on end to somebody to be friendly. Okay? It's not, you know, sometimes people can sit and blah, 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 blah for hours, and it doesn't make the friendship any stronger. And it doesn't mean the person's being friendly. Somebody can blab for hours and be totally self-centered, can't they? Okay. So, you know, being friendly can also manifest in just smiling pleasantly at somebody, even though you may have something else that you need to do at that time. Okay. And like I said, friendliness doesn't mean we have to go along with what everybody else wants. You know, oh, I'm going to be friendly. You know, all these people want to go out drinking and drugging. Oh, sure, I'll go with them. No. Okay? You know, you certainly have your right, while you're being friendly, to do the things that seem ethically, you know, sound to you and to avoid ethically unwise behavior. Okay? It doesn't mean just going along and, you know, with everybody. Okay, so that's just a little bit, you know, a few reflections about friendliness and about using some of the traditional Buddhist meditations for developing it.